You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McCollum. Since our last show, I've had reason to call Australia's 000 emergency service number from a mobile phone. All things went smoothly, but the number of questions the call taker asked me because I called from a mobile phone was surprising in this day of GPS positioning and allegedly smart mobile technology. Firstly, I didn't have to press 5 to speak to an operator. This was introduced to try and reduce the number of unnecessary calls to the essential services, but has obviously been removed. Secondly, the call taker didn't even know what state I was calling from, something I would have thought would be simple and straightforward to pass through the phone network. And finally, when the Telstra call taker hands your call to the service you need, that's the police, fire or ambulance, a verbal serial number is handed over to the incoming operator, which they then key into their terminal to access the information that the Telstra call taker has accessed, along with additional details about the service you're calling from. In this day and age of modern mobile communications, something is fundamentally wrong in the way that the 000 phone system works from a technical point of view. And to top it all off, the call taker asked me for the number I was calling from. Was she just verifying the number on the screen, or did she not have it? My call was not of a life or death nature, but in the case of a real emergency where every moment can make a difference, one has to wonder how much better things could be if the technology actually worked.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Grand plans for 3's expansion, more iPhone bill shock, Google updates ad quality judgment, Apple offers to replace bad iPhone batteries, and Myob buys an Australian web hosting company. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Australians lose $36 million a year to Nigerian scam emails. The competition watchdog alleges mobile phone quiz offer misleading. The Reserve Bank takes aim at PayPal over eBay payment rules. Japan warns of iPod fire hazard, and Myob gobbles up another web hosting business. This is Tech Talk News. First this evening, Apple has released a software patch that will hopefully address users' complaints of slow web browsing speeds, poor reception, and dropped calls. Apple has rushed software update 2.02 into the market after angry iPhone users flooded forums and message boards with complaints related to the device's ability to connect to 3G networks. A number of bloggists and forum participants have reported that the reception and connectivity has not improved. Even worse, technology site CNET has stated that a number of users are reporting that even the patch has actually made their iPhone worse. Users report that some applications no longer work after the update, and others say that their device crashes more frequently. Part of the problem is that nobody is actually too sure about what the software update was supposed to fix. Apple declined to release any details with the patch other than to say it was designed to fix bugs. Apple's chief executive, Steve Jobs, said overnight that another patch will be released in September. It might be hard to believe, but it seems plenty of Australians are still falling for the Nigerian scam emails and have sent more than $36 million to the African nation. The email typically requires victims to hand over their bank account details, along with a small amount for the promise of a windfall, often in the tens of millions of dollars. The scammer then disappears with the money or asks the victim to send more money or risk missing out on the windfall. Detective Superintendent Brian Hay, part of the Queensland Police Fraud Squad, told the Sydney Morning Herald that Australians send about $3 million to Nigeria each month, although the actual extent of the Nigerian fraud could be much larger, as many victims were too embarrassed to report the crime. According to the report, Queensland Police recently contacted 139 people who had sent money to Nigeria and found 135 were fraud victims. Some victims had lost up to $5 million. Professionals and the elderly, particularly well-off self-funded retirees, are common victims. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has launched legal action against a company for misleading consumers in ads for its text and Win mobile phone services. TMG Australia Pacific advertised mobile phone quiz products that offers viewers the chance to win cash prizes by texting a response to a phone number operated by the firm. The ACCC claims the ads, which ran on television, were likely to mislead or deceive viewers because they failed to disclose that, to be eligible for the prize, participants were required to pay a $5 joining fee. Participating in the quiz also resulted in consumers signing up to a subscription quiz consisting of 6 SMS messages per month at the cost of $5 each. And prizes could not be awarded to residents of the ACT, Victoria and Queensland, even though they would be charged for the service. The ACCC is seeking orders from the federal court, including an injunction preventing them from engaging in the conduct again, corrective TV ads and payment of its legal costs. The ACCC chairman, Graham Samuel, says mobile premium services similar to those provided by TMG are a common source of complaint to the competition watchdog. The Reserve Bank says it will hold discussions with eBay subsidiary PayPal over rules that force eBay sellers to offer PayPal and restrict their ability to offer buyers other payment methods. The central bank said in a statement that over recent months, the board has received a number of comments on the no surcharge and no steering rules that apply to payments using the PayPal system, as well as the mandatory acceptance of PayPal on eBay's auction site. No surcharge rules prevent eBay sellers from charging buyers a surcharge to recoup the cost of using a particular payment method, such as a credit card or PayPal. No steering rules prevent eBay sellers from steering customers towards payment methods other than PayPal. eBay seller Robert Vandermeer, who is part of a group of sellers campaigning for eBay to stop forcing sellers to use PayPal, describes the RBA's action as a big step forward for Australia's 5 million eBay users. Japan's economy, trade and industry minister has warned iPhone users to be wary of overheating iPods after two new reports of minor fires in Tokyo during August caused by overheating iPod Nanos. According to the ministry, Apple has been notified of a total of 14 similar cases in Japan. Two of the fires resulted in users suffering minor burns. The fires appear to have been sparked by overheating batteries on the device. The ministry has pinpointed the problems to four iPod Nano models, the MA004JA, the 5JA, the 99JA, and the 107JA. It's been reported that 1.8 million units were sold between September 2005 and September 2006 in Japan. And finally today, financial software firm Myob has advanced its expansion into the web services market with the acquisition of Melbourne-based web hosting company SmartyHost. Myob signalled its intention to move into web hosting earlier this year and purchased business-orientated web hosting operations Illisys in March. Myob purchased the shares and existing debt of SmartyHost for $7 million. The firm currently generates more than $3 million of revenue and over $1 million in EBIT. Myob Chief Executive Tim Reed says the acquisition will deliver the company access to a solid client base and the ability to provide a suite of web design and marketing functions that will help it become a one-stop shop in web hosting. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
The RBA, the Reserve Bank of Australia, joins the chorus against eBay PayPal exclusivity claim.
If I keep all my documents in my documents...
That's a good place to keep them.
With the tiny little networks that we used to have, the serial networks and so forth, you couldn't run these sort of virtual engines the way that people are doing it now.
The SMS, the telephone companies must be wrapping their heads together with
absolutely.
That. Research suggests Microsoft overestimated Vista security.
No.
Say it's not true.
Is it in the same way that we'd have a blind trust in Microsoft if we were using the Mesh product?
There's still some alternatives. There's Microsoft's Paint.
How important do you think you are? Who the hell cares? You don't work for the CIA, and the CIA don't care about you.
Really?
It's not sheer bloody-mindedness, then I don't know what is.
My book. Face Space.
Micro Who. We were coming on.
Micro Who.
Yeah,
yeah, Micro Face now. My Face. My Face. You've been on My Face? Oh, no. Yes.
No, don't stop now, son.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Showtime.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to the show. Tech Talk Radio, that is. I'm Andrew McComb, your host. A panel of two of us tonight. On the other side of the desk is Dr. Graham. Graham, how are you this evening?
Good, thanks, Andrew. How are you?
Oh, look, can't complain. Technology's failing us a little bit this evening. There's some web-related issues out there.
Are there?
If you're trying to log into the chat, be patient. I believe it's a DNS issue.
Oh,
so
okay.
We might have been hacked.
Oh, that's not good.
Who knows? Anyway, we'll see what happens as the show goes on. But welcome aboard, everybody, wherever you might be listening to us, on the stream, on the pod. Yes, we're going to hopefully get you up to date with a little bit of news and goings-on in the tech world this week. JD passes in his apologies this evening. He's been otherwise detained by family matters. And the doctor,
Dr. Ron is still travelling.
He's still abroad.
Somewhere in Europe.
Yes. I don't know where he is at the moment. Sure. I haven't spoken to him for a day or two. Not since last.
He might be on the continent by now.
Yeah, actually, I think he said he was going to be in Denmark. Yeah. You're probably right, actually.
So, there you go.
Yeah, they might be up listening to us. What time is it? It'll be daylight where they are at the moment as we go to air. So that's, you never know, you're lucky in a big city.
Cheerio to Dr. Ron and Matthew if you're listening.
Absolutely. Might hear from them later. But it's been an interesting week in tech this week. There's been some funny stuff come out in the world. I've had some very interesting experiences along the way. But nonetheless, we'll talk about those as we go. Phil Burgess, as we know.
Yeah.
Is leaving the big T.
Public relations dude for Telstra.
Yeah. He can write the book on public relations. He's unbelievable. Just a couple of interesting things I was reading about on the course of the week. As I was sort of, reading a bit about the history of Phil Burgess and his role in the organisation, I was drawing some parallels to a Queensland politician who's now no longer with us.
Yes.
Rest in peace, Sir Joe Bjelke-Petersen. Sir Joe was known for his, his great hold of the English language. He could communicate like no other person could. Now, reading through some of this is from, I think it was ZDNet in Australia. They published a list of, not so much Joe speak, but Phil speak.
Phil Burgess's greatest hits.
Absolutely. And I was just having a bit of a chuckle and a bit of a read through them. And here's just a couple. We can also talk about it a little bit as we go. This is what... This was the response to former Prime Minister John Howard on who could expect Telstra to stop attacking government regulation, to which Phil responded, only someone from another planet, whatever that means. And on Telstra's rivals building their own broadband network, and Phil said, if Optus, Boptus, Moptus and Floptus, sorry, that's Nor, or Floptus, wants to write a cheque for $4 billion or $8 billion or whatever, go right ahead, do it. Don't talk about it, do it. He had a way with words. Anyway, we'll drag out a few more of those as the night goes on. Phil Burgess, for those of you who haven't quite caught up on all the gossip, has put in his resignation. Going home, apparently his mum's crook or something like that. So he's leaving the shores, taking his handshake with him, and off he goes.
Off he goes, yeah.
Anyway, I had the lovely privilege of talking on ABC Radio during the course of the week. We had a lot of fun, actually, talking about GPS and location devices. And I know that's one of your favourite topics too, Graham, which we'll talk about very shortly. But
my now infamous rant.
That's right. Infamous, that's a very good word, actually. We ended up putting a bit of John Cleese into the mix, which was very funny, but we'll talk about that coming up. So stay tuned.
Okay.
Also, on tonight's show, Lydia Davis catches up about SEOs and things like that. So
cool.
Lydia's back. Yeah, she's been...
Haven't heard from her for a while.
Oh, she's like Dr. Ron. They've always got all this spare time. They travel the world and they just travel.
And they're never around. So anyway, Lyd's managed to come out from under a rock somewhere in well, actually, last time she went away, she went to Cancun in Mexico, and the place blew down with a big hurricane that went through afterwards. And this time she went there again. I'm not sure what's happened this time, but anyway, she's back. And she's been down at the SES convention. Just down the road from her.
What's an SES convention?
That's a good idea. I don't think it's what we think it is.
No, in Victoria, that would mean the state emergency
service.
That's
right.
It'd mean something else.
But she went there for the right reasons and bumped into someone and had a chat with them, but without giving the thunder away. Michael Gray is his name, and he's a search engine optimization guru.
Ah, now I've just done a Google. SES is search engine strategies, is that right?
Yes, yes, and link building and stuff like that. So we'll have a chat. Well, Lydia will have a chat with him. Very interesting, if you're building websites and stuff like that, this guy's a fairly well-respected blogger in the sphere of search engine optimization, and talks to the big powers of B, the big G, from time to time. So, yeah. Anyway, the big news this week, if you can call it big news, Nigel Dews is the CEO of Hutchison 3.
Oh, yes.
Now, we had end-of-year results announced by Hutchison's during the course of the last few weeks, and the good news is, well, good news, they're doing well, is to summarise, to paraphrase what
good
he said in about half an hour,
yeah.
They're doing well. There's some interesting new news coming out, and that is that they're looking to expand their network. They've negotiated new roaming deals with Telstra.
Okay.
They are going to have, as of from September, access to Telstra's 850 meg HSDPA network.
Oh, really?
And roaming fees will come down. They didn't say when, but they've done deals
so
with the big T.
It'll still cost more if you cross over from 3 to the next G.
It will still, well, it'll be roaming involved as to what the price structure is. It's too early to call yet. For all of us who have found the restrictions of a city-centric telco, 3 will potentially be broadening horizons and moving a bit further afield. Mm. They're also rolling out new base stations in areas which were traditionally roaming for them. So their coverage, their infrastructure is also going to roll out, and we'll see some interesting stuff. So
presumably just pushing the edges out, getting a bit more coverage around the fringes of the urban areas, or maybe in very popular regional centres.
Well, they're heading down to the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria, which is a fairly sizable population.
I heard a rumour something about Phillip Island.
Could well be down there, and also in the central coast of New South Wales towards, I think it's Wollongong, or Newcastle, actually. One way or the other. They're going to be heading up that way. We'll hear a little bit of his announcement in just a few moments.
Excellent.
But up until now, 3 customers have only been serviced with 3G on the carrier's own network, which is 3's network, which reaches around 56% of the population. And anyway, this is looking to expand. Of course, when you roamed, you went down onto 2G.
Onto 2G, that's right, onto the old Telstra GSM network.
Yeah, that was the arrangement that they had. So,
which worked fine for phone calls, but didn't give you any of the added features, you know, video calls and data and all that sort of good stuff.
Well, and it's fairly evident how mobile broadband is becoming, how should you say, it'll outpace voice, I reckon, in the not-too-distant future.
It's starting to become an important service. Yeah, people want to have their email wherever they are and all that sort of stuff. So
I think data's becoming more important than voice ever will be. Voice is great for the here and nows, but data's good for checking things and browsing things, especially with
people
a lot
like
of the...
People connected these days.
Yeah, the location GPS-based technology, which requires a bit of an internet feed to look up a map wherever you might happen to be. It's all there. Anyway, this is what Nigel had to say as part of his announcement of the financials, which was earlier this week.
As announced today, we're expanding our 3G coverage to reach 96% of the population during the second quarter of next year through building into new coverage areas and new 3G roaming on parts of Telstra's 850 megahertz network. The new site build is commencing this year in areas of high roaming, including Newcastle and the Central Coast in New South Wales and the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria. Around 50 of the additional sites will be complete by the end of this year. 3G roaming on parts of Telstra's 850 megahertz network is in addition to our existing 2G roaming on parts of Telstra's GSM network, already covering 96% of the population. The network expansion will deliver an improved customer experience along with a reduction in our roaming costs. And the upgrade of our HSPA network to 7.2 megabits will continue during the second half of 2008 and will be substantially complete in the first half of 2009, providing peak speeds of up to 6.4 megabits per second. We expect an increase in the range of mobile broadband devices and smartphones at lower prices, providing a catalyst to further increase the use of mobile data. Wholesale roaming costs also reduced from September 2008, following the renegotiation of our roaming deal with Telstra. We expect to have completed key initiatives to provide our customers with access to 3G services in areas covering 96% of the population during the second quarter of 2009.
So there you go. They've got some great expansion potential coming up. And I think, just reading between the lines, I'm not sure whether he mentioned there because I was just looking at the chat. We're back online now. The chat is back, everybody, if you're listening on the stream. It was a DNS-related issue. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see just how much more of an uptake they'll have in growth, I think.
Yeah.
Because they are a very cost-effective provider and they do use the incumbent's biggest network, it's got a lot going for it.
Yeah, it'll all depend on what those roaming charges are when you travel, whether it improves the situation or not. Because that's the only thing they've got going against them is that they're so restricted geographically. If you're not in one of the four big cities that they cover, then you're not on the network, and you may as well go with Telstra.
Yeah. Do you have much to do with Three? I don't think you're a Three customer, are you?
No, I'm not. I've been watching them closely. I've been sort of wanting to pick my moment when to go across. I like being on the Telstra Next G network.
It's good. I'm on the Telstra Next G for broadband, and they've changed their data plans.
Yeah,
everything's changing. Actually, it's the iPhone we've got a lot to thank for, and this is one of them. They're forcing all the telcos to have a bit of a look see at their data plans and how they treat their customers.
Although sometimes they have different plans for the iPhone than they do for other data, but even so, it's certainly shaking up the market a bit.
Now, speaking of 3G, Apple and their ubiquitous iPhone, well, they want it to be ubiquitous. I don't know whether it is just yet.
Yep.
There's a little birdie told me an email today, and this little birdie is a good source from the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
And it says that I heard last week that Apple deliberately altered the 3G failover points to ensure that the iPhone either got great signal or went to GSM. Not sure what that point really was. Certainly the result in Australia has been that Telstra customers tend not to notice, but Optus customers certainly do. Let alone the poor Three customers living near the edge of coverage. So someone's having a bit of a tweak there.
Yeah, I've heard other comments about this failover point. This is the point where it decides that the 3G signal's not good enough and it cuts over to the 2G. And yeah, I think there was a statement from the manufacturer of the 3G chip that they used that said that Apple had not used the recommended failover points.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Anyway, I have another little... Hopefully this doesn't give it away. This is another little birdie. Same birdie, actually. Changes have been made to the AT&T network to compensate, but there are concerns now that if they try and change it back. Also, still queues of 30 people outside the Apple store at 5 p.m. on Sunday waiting to buy an iPhone. Haven't you learned yet? So there's something very strange going on with a lot of the rumours and wirelesses and things like that when it comes to iPhone.
Now, speaking of, I don't know whether this is a wild rumour or not, but I saw it on a website somewhere that apparently in Poland, where the iPhone has been released, there were actors being paid to queue up outside the Apple shops.
In Poland?
That's what I read somewhere.
Oh, my goodness me. That's amazing. Well, I wonder who they were paid by. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. Yes, if you're listening to us, the chat is fully functional again this evening after a slight DNS issue. But anyway, we're there. Lots of people logging in. Hello. Even Lydia is there. So you can come and have a chat to Lydia. She's up, obviously, very early in the morning. Hang on, let me do the maths. Yeah, it's about 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning in California. She's 3:27. There you go. See, I'm reading the chat live. thank God this got working. I was getting cranky. Well, she's not a pretty sight when she's cranky, and she's next to her husband, so probably at a good arm's length and having several cups of coffee. We will be hearing from Lydia later on this evening, and if you want to come along, have a chat to us on the forum. We're all there.
On the chat. That's at chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
That is. Now, let's talk about GPSs. I was having a chat on the ABC, as you do, the other day.
Yeah.
About GPS technology and all these Garmins and Navmans. And I was talking with Carol, and we had a few callers call in, which is always a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Talkback radio. And let's just say that a lot of people are still placing a tad too much emphasis on buying these little Navman TomTom things that go in your car.
Right. What's wrong with that?
Well, nothing's wrong with it. One caller rang up and said that her father had bought one of these devices, and he lived up around the bush somewhere.
Yeah.
And he'd called it after her. Her name was Karen, so they called the GPS, the TomTom Navman, whatever it was that they had in their car, Karen, To which we asked the question, why do they call it Karen? And her response was, because I always tell them where to go.
I see.
But they're becoming fairly common in cars. You know, you see them everywhere, especially around where we drive and all things like that. But there are some really interesting developments in GPS navigation, not unlike what happens with your mobile phone. You know how you can customize your ringtones?
Yes.
Get dumb things on your ringtone. I must remind you, I must put my phone on silent because I've forgotten to. That's what you do when you do radio. There's some fantastic little ringtones that are out there. And, of course, now there's some really interesting people that will navigate with you when you do your mobile phone. You know, Mr. T is one. Ozzy Osbourne is another. We've actually spoken about this. Dr. Ron brought some interesting...
These are the customised voices that you can install into your TomTom or other navigation device to, instead of the boring ones that come with it.
Mm. Yes, boring is being the word. But you can get sexy ones and...
We should do a Tech Talk Radio voice for the TomTom.
Oh, really?
At the end of the road, turn right.
Oh, dear. Anyway, John Cleese has entered the Python guru.
Yes.
Everyone knows who John Cleese is. He needs no introduction. Anyway, John Cleese has entered the foray. Here's just one of his small little samples about an observation that you get if you're going probably a tad too fast.
If you look out of the window, you will notice that the locals all have one leg shorter than the other and pointy heads. And if you continue driving at this speed, it may happen to you too.
Now, that'd be really funny if you chirped up and had John Cleese popping when you do the speed limit thingy. I thought it was just got us laughing on the ABC. Anyway, there's some other great little devices. This is John telling you how to navigate.
At the end of the road, turn right, then bear left, then bear right, beaver left.
Beaver left.
There you go.
And finally, the art of turning the vehicle around. Once you go past that point of, when you're driving around a circle and you have to turn the vehicle around, it's something like this.
Turn around when possible so that you will be facing in the opposite direction from the direction in which you're directing your vehicle now.
Well, that's perfectly clear.
So as you're driving along, you get all these great little comments. But I just thought that was very humorous. So everyone's getting in on the
app
now.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
So, and they're relatively cheap. You can buy something like that for your TomTom for around about 15 or 20 bucks Australian. Download it. And you must have... I don't have one of these gadgets yet. When I say I don't have one, I've shot television commercials for them, would you believe?
Oh, yes.
But I don't actually... I've never got around to buying one.
You've had the demo units, but you haven't actually lashed out yourself.
Yes, no, that's right, exactly. I've had no calls to actually lash out yet, but obviously it's something coming down the track. Mm. But there you go. That might give you the incentive to get over the line and invest in a TomTom or something to those sort of degrees. Other interesting things that have happened this week.
Yes,
Google is upgrading its ad quality judgment. You know the ads that you get plastered with when
ad
Google decides
quality
to
judgment.
I don't know. This is Big Brother, I reckon, where you can actually, it knows a bit about you and places ads which are targeted at you, maybe. Anyway, it says Google is again visiting the health spa, this time for a makeover for its mechanism for judging ad quality. The critical measurement is the tool which deciphers which ads should be placed next to which search results. As it stands, the system uses an auction system to determine which ads to place next to search results. Google rates these ads on how much people pay, the click-through rate, and more recently, how quickly the advertiser's page loads, as well as using a static measurement of value in evaluating whether to display an advertiser's ad for a specific keyword. Anyway, the new system announced by Google last week will involve ad quality being judged at the time the user makes a search and will be tested on a small set of users before trying it with the majority. So I think we're going to head down the lines of real-time search presentation or ad presentation based on the world's largest search engine.
Yep.
Google said on its AdWords blog that they're replacing the static per keyword quality score with a system that evaluates an ad's quality each time it matches a search query. This way, AdWords will be used the most accurate, specific, and up-to-date performance information when determining whether an ad should be displayed. So I guess when you jump on the Big G and you do a search for Tech Talk Radio, you'll get nothing because we don't advertise. That's when it's non-biased radio that we have over here.
Yeah, but what Google will do, they will work out that what you're searching for is a technical information source and put up ads that might interest the sort of people that are going to look for Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, so, you never know.
I presume that's what's what they're going to do. So one thing, and this is what Google is really, really good at, and this is how they've made their billions. You know, the main search results that are so reliable and so trustworthy, and then the bar across the top and the bar down the right-hand side that have sponsored results, advertising results. So, yeah, presumably they will become more relevant.
One can hope. Anyway, also, let's talk a bit about Apple. We're going to jump all over the place tonight, but Apple offers to replace bad iPod batteries. As we mentioned in the news tonight, they're starting to get a bit warm in some people's pockets, and Apple Japan said that it would replace faulty batteries found to be overheating in iPod Nano devices after the government ministry warned everybody about it. That's not bad, is it? But then again, I don't know, they probably sold something like 22 million Nanos in Japan, and to have just a few, like 14 or 20 or something like that, it was a small amount, get warm and explode in someone's pocket, that's not bad, I would
have thought. Yeah, it's a fairly serious, if the battery does catch fire or cause, you know, a serious injury, you know, you don't have to have too many of them to want to prevent that from happening again.
Yeah, 14 similar cases in Japan, there you go. Two of the fires resulted in users suffering minor burns. Battery burns wouldn't be nice, I wouldn't have thought.
Wouldn't be pleasant at all.
Now, whilst we're also talking Apple, apparently in the United States, disgruntled iPhone 3G users have decided to sue the company. An Alabama woman has filed a class action lawsuit against Apple in the US, claiming that the iPhone's 3G speeds weren't up to the mustard.
Yep.
In a 10-page complaint filed on Tuesday in the U.S. District Court, last Tuesday that was, in northern Alabama, Birmingham resident Jessica Allen Smith charged Apple with a breach of express and implied warranty and unjust enrichment. Unjust enrichment. Have you had any unjust enrichment lately?
I'm pretty sure I haven't.
No, you wouldn't get it here in any of our telcos.
No.
Smith, who thought the complaint referred to the phone she purchased as a defective iPhone 3G, sought a class action status. Well, there you go. That's what they do over there. Isn't that right, Lid? She's on the forum as we speak. On the chat as we speak. Yeah, but I don't know. Are we getting too litigious here? Is that the network to blame or is it the iPhone to blame? Who knows? Maybe it's that funny little chip that they've got the Infurion or whatever they call it.
Yeah, well, I suppose if nothing else, it might sort out what the real nature of the problem is.
Well, one can hope. One can only hope. In other interesting news, the National Broadband Network over here, which is the... I don't know. Will we ever see it? This is the
Labor government. They canned it, didn't they?
I don't know. But the Labor government did a pitch, you know, in the last election to, you know, we're going to give 4.7 mil. It's what Telstra has been up in arms about. It's seeming to take forever. But the as we reported last week on Tech Talk Radio, the offers or the expressions of interest, should I say, closed last week.
Uh-huh.
Now, these are the people who got their... They're going to go ahead with it and put their tender in. AAPT put theirs in. Agile Communications, which is Internode.
Okay, yep.
Internode,
yep.
Or they're one of they're one of the companies of that provide group. Internode.
Yeah, yep.
They said absolutely.
Yep.
Digital Rivers Networks, whoever they are, I think that's a consortium of a few telcos, but it doesn't come to mind at the moment. Someone out there in the chat might know.
I've come across them in terms of, you know, providing downloads for software you buy online.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yes. Yes, you're
aren't
right,
they
actually.
The delivery people? Yeah.
Maybe. They were going to have a bit of a bash. They said it would be in today. Macquarie Telecoms has put theirs in. Next Gen Networks, no one knows about them. Optus said yes. Pipe Networks are unknown. Primus Telecom said yes. Sol, well, they're in a bit of...
Pipe Networks do a whole lot of interconnects between ISPs.
Yeah?
Yeah. They're fairly big sort of behind the scenes in the
okay.
In the internet.
Well, that's been in their interest. Sol, who's a reseller and obviously trying to get into... But Sol's, that's an interesting company. They've just had a shake-up and a takeover.
Sol just merged with TPG, so to become one
did
big
they?
Conglomeration.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sol, basically, it's unknown what they're doing with TPG now. Telstra have obviously put theirs in. Transact, which run the fibre around Canberra.
Oh, yes, yes.
They get the best stuff up there. That's really blazingly fast. they didn't want to tell anybody. And Vodafone managed to put theirs in as well.
Wow, so it's quite a few fingers in the pot there. It's things around. So
now I think we've got 2 weeks before they have to submit their plans, I think, from what the rules of engagement were. So anyway, we'll have to watch this space.
Oh, let's just hope they do the right thing.
All right, we've been prattling for a bit. That's time for a break. We'll jump on the chat and say good day to everyone. And come and join us there, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Ah, nice piece of driving.
You're listening. Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panellists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panellists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
And we're back again. Hey, Graham, have you ever been online and having a chat on a forum thing or something like that to a bank? Yeah, to a bank.
No, I don't think I've ever chatted online with a bank.
Haven't you? Australia's largest banks are harnessing the power of social networking.
Oh, yes.
Heaven forbid. That's a bit of a risk in its own sort of way, in a lot of respects. You're sitting there talking to someone from a bank. Well, apparently, I thought this was quite interesting, that a lot of banks, or in particular Westpac, is allowing social networking with their staff online on Facebooks and things like that. Maybe there's a Westpac point. I haven't had a look yet, but I thought, okay, Oh, that's quite an interesting thing, because everybody else likes having chats and logging in. And
so this isn't an official bank sort of chat. This is allowing the individual
to talk about banking technology. It has to fall within the guidelines of what the bank allows for online policy. So they can't surf the net and do whatever it is, but they can get online and use their Facebook and stuff like that. Interesting.
Curious.
Yeah. Anyway, some other interesting gossip coming out this week too is IE8, Internet Explorer 8.
Yeah.
Some of the journalists in the mainstream media are calling this a porn mode, but it's...
I've read this.
Read into this what you like. Microsoft's IE8 might be getting a private browsing mode.
That's a better word for it.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to get the headlines, don't you?
Yeah.
That will enable users to surf the net and not leave sticky fingerprints. That's from IT News. They published this one. Microsoft has gone to the trademark office and filed in two application forms. And the first one is for a program for accessing and using the internet and the World Wide Web, which will delete search history after it leaves a website. The second allows computer programs to disable the history and filing cache feature of a web browser, and computer software for notifying the user of a web browser when others are tracking web usage and controlling information others can access about it. Do you think that's... I know. Privacy surfing the web is always a good thing, but yeah, is it too far?
Well, no. It's always been an issue that if you're using a shared computer or an office computer or something like that, that it's not necessarily for illicit activities. It might just be that you don't want anybody else to know that you use a particular bank or to read your private emails on Hotmail or whatever it might happen to be. And this will allow you to go and look at those sites and not leave the traces behind, because this is one thing that Internet Explorer has been notorious for in the past, is it generates masses of what in the old days would have been called paper trail, you know, logs and...
Have you ever cleaned up...
cached files and all sorts of things,
Have you ever manually cleaned up all those files that you go into My Documents on a Windows machine and you dig down and you find all the
temporary internet files?
Oh, it can take up... Well, I exaggerate and say gigabytes, but seriously, it can take up 50 or 100 meg quite easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's huge amounts of data there. And, of course, in some ways that's a good thing, because it helps Internet Explorer to guide you back to a site where you've been before. So if you start to type the address, it remembers that you've been there before and offers to display the full address for you. If it's a site that's got lots of graphics on the page, it might have lots of logos or, you know, little graphics that make up the navigation of the page. It'll cache all those, and what that means is that it'll keep a copy of them on your computer so that it doesn't have to download them again every single time you display that same page on that same website. So there's advantages of it. It's doing good things for you, but it does have this privacy concern that it leaves evidence behind that you've been to a particular site, which may not always be what you want.
If you're not guilty, you've got nothing to hide, though. That's what I'd always say. It's probably something.
But it's not a guilt thing either.
It'd probably be really good.
It's a privacy thing.
It'd be good in a internet kiosk, I guess, if you've been to a bank site or you've been doing something. Ever do that in an internet kiosk. Don't do that. Don't ever go to your bank site.
But even
never
if log you've just been, you know, reading your emails on Hotmail or something, and you know you've got your photos of your family that somebody sent you, a photo of the grandkids or whatever it might be, you don't want to leave a photo of your grandkids behind on what might be a public machine.
That's true.
Which might otherwise end up in the internet cache.
Yeah, or put it in Facebook or something like that instead. Dr. Ron's been big on the photos in Facebook at the moment too. He's been up there travelling. What is he? Put some castles up the other day. Had a bit of a look-see. Anyway. So Internet Explorer 8. Hopefully there'll be some other improvements with that web browser when it comes out. They're sort of dragging their traces. I thought it was going to be out by now, but it's taking us a while.
There's a beta version floating around. The beta at the moment is primarily targeted towards website developers, so they can start to get a handle on what they're going to need to do to their websites. But the beta for general consumer use is just around the corner from what
they say.
Have
you loaded it up yet?
No, I haven't loaded it up yet. I had a look at it. I had a look at some of the info about it, but I haven't actually downloaded and installed it.
I loaded up a beta version of Firefox Beta 3. And burnt my fingers.
I've had a bad experience with that.
I've been very reticent to go down the beta trail unless I'm absolutely sure that it's going to do something that
to do. Yeah, you don't do it on your production machines. You do it on a test machine or something like that because, yes, the whole thing about a beta version is that it's still in testing. It's not a completed product yet, so it might have serious problems with it still.
Okay, just reading the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Kyphony version 2.0 of Safari released on April 29th, 2005, first offered private browsing.
There you go.
And Warlock has said that Firefox would pre-cache all pages linked from the current page to make them load faster. There you go. See, they're all out there being in,
Yep.
They're forging technology and making all their browsers work a little bit better. It can only get better.
And there's been specially packaged versions of browsers like Firefox, because Firefox, of course, is an open source browser, so it's very easy for people to modify it. And there's been specially packaged versions of that specifically to provide private browsing. And there's also been third-party tools to clean up your browsing history. So the idea has been around for a long while, but having it integrated into Internet Explorer 8 is only just going to make it easier for people to access.
Phil's got the solution. He says, I tend to use portable Firefox and a portable Thunderbird on a USB stick because they all run off the USB stick, don't they? You don't have to install them or do anything like that.
That's the type of thing I was talking about, yeah.
Which doesn't leave traces of any files in any local hard drives. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
If you want to do it that way. I'm sure if people want to become private, they can do all that sort of stuff. So, yes. Now, Olympics, they're finished, thank goodness. Did you watch much of it?
No.
Oh, good. Yes, there's been heated debate around our office about the lack of quality that's been delivered in Australian television land, and I think Adam, not wanting to go down that path again, has certainly vented about the Channel 7's coverage. The long and short of it is, too, that one of the reasons why Channel 7 didn't do multi-channeling is because legislatively wise, they can't
yet.
They've got to wait till the end of the year. So, but I would have thought that they may have been able to get a exemption based on the fact that it's the Olympics. But I guess the other thing too, which
not
everyone
really
was a bit,
in there just to try probably.
Well, they are the outgoing Olympic broadcaster because in 2012, when it goes to London, Channel 9 and Foxtel
there you go
become the broadcasters. And let me tell you, Foxtel will run a channel for each event, which is the way it should be, the way we should have seen Olympics this time round, which would be interesting. But the reason why I ask, we covered last week that white goods manufacturers, or sellers, should I say, like the Harvey Normans, have seen some pretty impressive sales in big screen TVs and high definition TVs
in recent
times, which has been pretty good. But let's talk about the living room. The living room, as in the PlayStation, the interactiveness and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Sony and Microsoft are sort of already in the living rooms already with the Xbox and the PlayStation.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you think Apple are doing about it? Are they going to miss the boat? They've got Apple TV. That's the only thing that Apple have got, and I'm sure the guys in the chat will probably concur with this. Apple TV is the only thing that's available which can go into your living room right now.
Right. Okay.
Do you think they're going to miss the boat? Adam has an opinion on that, and that's what this week's couch is all about. Whether Apple has missed the boat or not. Here's Adam Turner.
If Apple doesn't deliver a full-blown media center soon, it's going to be trampled by Sony's push to make the PlayStation 3 the one set-top box to rule them all. Sony Computer Entertainment Europe has announced that a trial service of VidZone will begin early next year for PS3 owners in Europe, Australia and New Zealand. The service is initially offering unlimited music, but it will also launch a, quote, comprehensive film, TV and music download service at a later date. Combine this with the upcoming Play TV television tuner, which will turn your PS3 into a personal video recorder, and you've got yourself a device that's all things to all men. It's been clear for a long time that the PS3 is Sony's Trojan horse, disguised as a games console so it can sneak its way into your lounge room and then gradually assimilate your entire home. Microsoft has similar plans for Vista and the Xbox 360. Apple is the other key player in this space, although it's taking a very different approach. Conquering the lounge room requires three things: content, a way to deliver it, and a way to consume it. All the big players have been putting together the pieces of this puzzle for the last few years, but Sony seems to have the broadest offering. The PS3 is a powerful yet flexible beast designed to meet all your entertainment needs, as Sony gradually makes more content and services available. Microsoft has similar ambitions for the Xbox 360 and Vista Media Center editions. These games consoles turned media players already give Sony and Microsoft a foothold in our lounge rooms. Meanwhile, the Apple TV set-top box pales in comparison. It's deliberately designed to do as little as possible. While technophiles might want a best-of-breed solution in their lounge room, your average punter wants one device and one remote that does everything. The PS3 is heading this way, as is Vista Media Center. But Apple is going to miss the mainstream market if it doesn't launch an entertainment device that offers more than the Apple TV. Where's the DVD player? Blu-ray support? DivX support? PVR features? If you're one of the millions of PlayStation 3 owners, why would you be interested in the Apple TV? Sony has its finger in a lot of pies. It doesn't care if you're consuming DVD, Blu-ray, downloads, TV or games, because it provides the lot and the PlayStation 3 handles them all. Apple keeps the Apple TV simple because it just wants you to buy content from the iTunes store. But the fact Apple TV has failed to take off is proof that consumers won't tolerate the walled garden approach anymore. It might work for music, but it won't work for video. Insisting customers buy an Apple TV if they want to watch movies in high definition is certainly going to backfire on Apple. Cupertino needs to find a better balance between owning the customer and giving the people what they want. The Mac Mini is long overdue for a refresh, and there are rumours of a decent Apple Media Center, a cross between a Mac Mini and an Apple TV. Apple needs such a device if it's going to dominate the video market in the way it's dominated the music market. It also needs to accept the fact that people want to consume content beyond the walls of the iTunes store. Sony and the PlayStation 3 are striking major blows in the battle for our lounge rooms. Apple needs to strike back with something more impressive than the hobbled Apple TV.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Strike back, will the Empire get there? Mm. Will they strike back? What do you reckon?
Well, I honestly don't know. It's the big thing, isn't it? That, we've got so many of these devices that are 9/10 of the way there and have got something missing.
Apple's looking for world domination by 2012, allegedly.
Is that right?
Apparently, that's what their aim is.
Okay.
And the Mac Mini and all that sort of stuff. It's sort of all been sitting there and waiting.
But an Apple device on every desk, an Apple device in every living room.
Yeah, there was a car in front of me as I was driving to the studio tonight with a little Apple sticker on the back of it, nearly ran off the road.
Oh.
I was trying to get up there and see what they had, if they had any technology in the car, but no, sadly not. But there's a few people out there that, drive around with those on the back of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think, will they make it to the living room by then? I don't know. Adam raises some very good points. They've got to stop selling their wares on iTunes and sort of channeling it down their way of doing things and opening it up to everybody else, like the other companies have.
Yep, the more open all these things are, the better it is for us. And I was really pleased we spoke about it last week. The Big Pond Music starting to offer.
Yeah, was it you talking about that?
Yeah, Big Pond Music are offering MP3s without
The digital rights on it.
Without digital rights on it
and good quality.
And good quality ones too, yeah, 320K and
have you downloaded? Can you speak personally about that?
Yep, I signed up and downloaded an album and now that's and impressive because I'm really good.
I know your finickiness when it comes to is there such a word when it comes to audio.
I am finicky about audio.
And you're up there with MP3s like you are with GPSs if they're not of good quality.
That's right. But no, this is, and we spend a lot of time talking about Telstra on the show, but this is one thing that Big Pond appear to be getting right. But it's going in that right direction of giving the power back to the consumer.
Which is where it should be.
Which is where it should be. You know, I'm not going to pay money to download a file that I can't copy onto a CD or copy onto my iPod or copy onto some other player that I want to use or onto my phone because I want this flexibility to be able to use the music where I want it.
Call me romantic. I still like the CD. I go to the CD shop and buy a CD. We'll log online and it arrives the next day, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's what I do too, is order them online and they arrive in the post and it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, best of both worlds. But, you know, downloading in electronic formats is the way of the future. And, yeah, if you know, people want to take notice of that sort of approach and it's going to have to apply to movies and video, TV shows. We're not going to watch TV shows in the future the way we have in the past.
Oh, no, bring
on.
We're
going to subscribe to the vodcast and download the latest series of, you know, whatever it might happen to be.
I reckon bring on the new Sonys and Panasonics with the web browser built in and the Cat 5 check on the back.
Absolutely.
That's got to be, you know, you look at iView at the moment.
Yep.
Load up a web browser on one of those big screen tellies and you'll get better than VHS and probably not quite as good as DVD quality streamed to your living room.
But you get it when you want it.
Now that's the key, isn't it?
You don't have to be sitting in front of the TV at 8:30 to watch that show. You can watch it when you want to watch it.
And what's to say, look, the ABC is just the first here in this country because they're the trailblazers, but what's to say that the video libraries aren't or don't have models like that already underway?
Well, let's hope that people do, and this is the way of the future. But it also means that there's got to be, and this gets back to what Adam was saying, there's got to be a device in the lounge room that can handle all of it. Because there's no good having, you know, 18, you've got to have a Sony device to play your Sony content, and you've got to have an Apple device to play your Apple content, and you've got a TiVo that's crippled and doesn't work properly because Channel 7 are bastards, and all that. But this is the thing. People are not going to tolerate that sort of nonsense. You've got to have a device that can do the lot. Someone's got to do it, and whoever does it will win.
Jerry Seinfeld's been hired by Microsoft. To launch an advertising campaign against Apple. Did you hear about this?
Yes, this is... Yeah, this is not encouraging.
It's not encouraging. Apple keeps pummeling Microsoft in its ads and yada, yada, yada. The world's largest software manufacturer plans to hire comedian Jerry Seinfeld for its new marketing campaign.
Hello, Microsoft, look at your product quality. The bloggers and the forums and shows like us will do your marketing for you if you get it right.
Ah, yes. Continually being painted by Apple and other rivals as uncool and unsafe, Microsoft plans to spend, wait for it, sitting down, this is the gross national product of some developing countries, $300 million on a new series of advertisements designed around its Windows, not walls slogan that'll feature Jerry. And Microsoft Bill Gates. There you go, Lid. There you go. Microsoft Bill Gates will be back on your screen in the not-too-distant. You'll probably see it in the US before we get to see it over here. But nonetheless, it'll be on the internet. It'll do that viral marketing thing and end up in your email box before no time. Don't you think?
I'm sure it will. I've no doubt about it.
Anyway, good on you, Microsoft. That'll be good. We'll watch out for that one. Now, finally, just because we're talking about Apple and these sort of guys, China has banned Apple's iTunes music store in China.
Oh, did I? Because somebody put a song up there that was was pro-Tibet or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that the idea?
That's the way. If you can't beat them, join them. Or if you can't join them, stomp them out. Chinese authorities have blocked Apple's iTunes music store, apparently because more than 40 athletes have listened to protest songs by bands such as Rush and Alana Morissette. The US Tibetan activist group, the Art of Peace Foundation, invited Olympic athletes to download the album Song for Tibet free of charge. The foundation claimed that this mark of protest would communicate that compassion and non-violence can overcome intolerance and oppression.
But nothing can overcome the Chinese firewall.
No, the Chinese firewall's been pretty good. I wonder if that's all been reinstated to pre-Olympic status now that the games are over.
Look, I don't reckon it was ever really taken down. I'm sure that it was only opened up to the journalists of the games. I'm sure that the general public in China had no hope.
Yeah, I'm normally a scepticist, but I'm 100% behind you on that side of things. So, anyway. All right, we'll take a break. come and join us on the chat. Everyone's there at the moment. A lot of people there tonight. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Adam's there as well this evening. So come and have a chat. And when we come back, we're going to have a little bit of a listen to what Lyd has to say. She bumped into Michael Gray, the one of the search engine optimization gurus in the United States.
Excellent.
We'll find out all about that after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had, again, had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron is in the UK, no longer with us. Well, he'll be back shortly. I'm getting used to a new set of headphones, which are very interesting. And Graham Callaghan is on the other side of the panel this evening. JD had to go home. He had babysitting duties to do, unfortunately. Yes. That's the life of the highly paid life of a Tech Talk Radio panelist and all that sort of thing.
Yes, anyway, sometimes real life gets in the way.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just reading some email. You do tend to forget the emails when the chat room's going ballistically. Simon has sent us an email saying, it appears that the telcos are starting to realise the viability of mobile broadband. Hopefully data charges will continue to drop. The big problem that he sees is streaming live footage to a large amount of subscribers. It's a complete waste of bandwidth.
Yes.
And they have to come up with a way of broadcasting content on a single feed to be more effective. Couldn't agree with you more. Like, we were sitting here in the studio last week.
With the Olympics live feed.
With the, trying to log into the Telstra web server to watch the Olympics. And we got congestion. Busy. Sorry, go away. And they spammed me today saying, hey, now the Olympics are over. Do you want to sign up for our regular TV stuff? I thought, no, I don't think so.
No, it doesn't work. Go away.
No. Well, not that it doesn't work. I just think it may be that not too many people are watching it. I can't really quite come at watching television on a little screen about, you know, postage stamp size. It's a bit of overkill, really, isn't it? Anyway.
Well, I guess it depends on the situation. It would be all right to watch something like the news on screen on the tram on the way home if you were a tram traveller.
Yeah, then you've got the other problem too, where people are going to stick these handsets in their car kits and watch while they're driving their car. Naughty, naughty.
Yeah, well, got to not do that.
No. And it's very easy to do that when I was logging on the other day, because it just sits in a car kit and it's like talking on the video phone and things like that. But no, you wouldn't want to go there. It's not good. Not good at all. Anyway, let's moving a lot right along. Lydia Davis is our correspondent in the United States, Palo Alto to be precise, just down the road from San Francisco.
Yep.
Sort of near, in between that and San Jose down there.
Yep. Anyway, and she's talking about search engine technologies, which is a field where Lydia really...
Search engine strategies. That's what SES stands for, by the way.
Search engine strategies,
they had a conference held in San Jose last week, and
now,
she got there.
This is a field where Lydia really does tend to have her finger on the pulse. She knows what's going on in this field.
Finger on the pulse. Yes, that's right. Blogwell is her blog.
So, yep.
You can go and have a chat to her. Or come up on our
Definitely
chat tonight, the Tech Talk Radio chat.
Read.
Yes,
so,
exactly. But anyway.
Hopefully.
She sent me an email saying, this is happening, and what do you want me to go and have a chat about? And anyway, everything that I put up there was... She was bitterly disappointed. It ended up being a bit of a stooge, and people had their own... you know, agendas to... Anyway, but to cut a long story short, when she went along to this this conference in San Jose, she managed to sit next to a guy that she, you know, as you do when you go to these things, you chat to the person next to you for a bit.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, this was a guy by the name of Michael Gray. Now, Michael Gray is SEO, Search Engine Optimization, and social media consultant for a company called Atlas Web Services. And he was one of the speakers of the link building sessions. Now, link building is where you put your link on one page and link on another page.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And hopefully try and, you know, build some form of, I don't know, integrity in the web by credibilities and links and stuff like that. Anyway, so she caught up with Michael. Now, you can go and visit his website at atlaswebservices.com. It's really an information site. You hire him if you want to go and look about web building. But he's really performance-based marketing, search engine optimization, search engine marketing, blog consulting, social media optimization, social media marketing, and reputation management. Oh, I know a few companies that could do with his services.
Yeah.
So, and you can go visit his blog too, which is very interesting, which is at wolf-howell.com. And he's on Twitter and all that sort of stuff as well, but worth a bit of a read now.
Very good. And Lydia submitted an interview.
Yeah, Lyd caught up with him and had a bit of a chat, and it sort of sounds a bit like this.
Links are the primary method that Google uses right now to determine what a site's about. It's essentially a link equals a vote. Not all votes are equal, not all links are equal. Basically, a link from a more trusted website is worth a little bit more than a site that's not necessarily trusted. So something like the New York Times, where it's a very trusted website, is more important than the garage down the street who's giving you a link.
Now, a lot of people are obsessing about PageRank.
My opinion is that PageRank is an illusion. There's two PageRanks, again, the way I think. There's the toolbar PageRank, which they only update every 3 to 4 months, and then there's the internal PageRank, which Google uses. External PageRank is really not an accurate representation of anything at all. There are some sectors where Google has gone through and they've, you know, actively manipulated PageRank because they feel that people are attempting to game the system, so to quote-unquote. Places like real estate, it's an artificial measurement at all. It's not even close to being accurate anymore. So if you're going to look at it, use it as a very quick metric. Don't place any real stock in it. And if you go from a PageRank 7 to a PageRank 5, but your traffic is the same, it doesn't matter. It's not something you need to focus on at all.
When you say toolbar PageRank, you're talking about that little green...
The little green bar that they give you where it slides across.
Is there a difference between building links for blogs and building links for static?
Well, blogs are more of a... The way blogs are usually run, they run a sort of a communication between people. It's a little less formal, so generally blogs exchange links a little bit freer. That's one of the reasons that a lot of people are using blogs now and getting involved in blogging. But the links, they're weighted just the same. Where a link is on a page may be worth more or less, but just because it's from a blog doesn't mean it's worth more or less in any particular way. Blogs are very good. They're not for everybody. Blogs, basically, they do create a maintenance point, so you've got to have somebody sitting there writing a blog, maintaining the blog, going through comments, interacting with other blogs if you're going to get the most out of it. The biggest mistake a lot of companies make with blogs is they don't really have a good strategy to say, where are we trying to go? And they make it like this is the voice of the company. And basically, it becomes sort of an advertising press release kind of thing. And that's really not an effective use of your blog. A good way to use a blog is to help people use your product. An example I like to give is if you were selling camping supplies, tents, backpacks, that sort of thing, run a whole series of, make all of your blog posts about how to go camping so that people, you know, talk about cool places that people go camping, you know, wherever that may happen to be. That's the kind of thing that helps. You can mention your products that we went, you know, these are good things to use when you go there, but keep it more so that it's helping the customer. That's really how you're going to get the most out of it.
Yeah, that's very true. Are there best practices or guidelines for when you're linking out?
You know, try and be helpful. Using things like click here doesn't tell the search engines what the page is about. They're smart and they're looking at words on either side to try and figure it out, but put the link so that it actually describes what someone has on the other end of it. You know, there's an old book that's called Don't Make Me Think. Basically, you want somebody to know what they're going to get. If they're clicking that link, the person should have a reasonable idea what's going to be on the other side of that. It may not match exactly, but they should have some vague idea.
A lot of blogs now, I'm noticing, are doing roundup posts where they're linking out to, say, 20 or 30, you know, there's sometimes, you know, the best 100 mm-hmm. external links.
Mm-hmm.
Is that viewed badly, that linking that many out of the one?
They recommend 100, you know, at 101 the world doesn't fall apart, and I've definitely seen things that have way more than 100 on a page. They just recommend 100 because it's an easy number for them to manage, and generally it keeps the page of a normal size, and it's definitely a good rule of thumb.
Directories. There's a lot of directories out there. Mm-hmm. How do you know where to submit your site?
There's probably only a handful of general directories that are good for everybody. Places like Yahoo, Best of the Web, Business.com, those are probably your big core directories. After that, you start getting into some of the smaller ones, and the value drops off dramatically, and it's not necessarily always worth getting into. The best things that I like to recommend to people is go to see if any of the pages that are in the area that you're trying to rank for are actually ranking. For example, if you're doing a hotel, go and look up some of the travel pages for that and see what directories are coming up. It's okay if not your particular page is coming up, but as long as something in that sector is coming up, that's a good indicator that there's some value in that directory. Once you've gotten to that point, check the individual page. Make sure it's in the directory. You'll see some sites where the pages are not even in the directory. You know, they'll have thousands and thousands of pages. That's a bad thing. Empty pages in directories, another bad thing. Look at some of the links on there. Sometimes they'll put the date they were added. If there's nothing that's being added within a reasonable amount of time, you know, everything's 4 and 5 years old, that's probably not a good indicator. And again, look at the cache date. Put the individual URL in Google and pull up the cache date. If that's like over 60 days, another indicator that that's probably not a good spot to spend your money or your time trying to concentrate on.
One of the things that you had mentioned in your presentation yesterday was mine the backlinks of your competition. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Basically, what you want to try and do is look at the people who are ranking for your phrases. Go through and start looking at their backlinks. A lot of times you'll see there's common backlinks. There's some sites, you know, the top 10 sites, there's a bunch of core sites, usually either government resources or places like that, that are linking to all of them, and that's kind of helping. These are places that you really need to concentrate on getting links from.
What would be your best tip?
Be creative. Content is good. The better you can make your content and the more you can help people solve people's problems. People are into that. There's pieces like how to play a guitar. How many people are actually going to go on the internet to learn to play a guitar? A very small number, but a lot of people say, hey, this is a cool thing, and they're teaching me something in case I ever want to know. Those are the kind of things that people like to bookmark and save and are considered good resources. Solve people's problems, and that's what people want to link to.
Michael, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And very informative, too.
Yes.
I learned a lot. It's good. Linking is a very important thing because it's sort of part of the fabric of how the web works. And Google Places.
It certainly is, and it's how Google judges the value of the site. So
one of the many ways, absolutely. Yeah. So, yes, it was lovely to hear Lydia back on the radio too. She's on the chat.
Yes.
If you've got a question, you can come up on the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au right now, and she's there. They're accusing her of sounding American. I didn't think so. I thought that was good. Dear. Anyway, the other interesting thing too is the let's talk a little bit about Apple's and iPhones again because they're very topical. I think we'll be talking about iPhones for some time to come until the technology settles down and the phone plans settle down. The bill shock. Remember the bill shock we were talking the other day about?
Well, because the data plans are inadequate and people use a little bit of data and get a bill for $1 million. Yep.
There was two incidents in the mainstream press which caught my eye this week. Well, the first one is Optus's iPhone bill shock. And like Vodafone, Optus has started to receive complaints about the iPhone billing problems because they don't think people use data in this country. Well, I think they've had a bit of a wake-up here. Yes, but apparently Vodafone revealed that a larger number of customers have also been hit with larger-than-expected bills after the carrier had not correctly transitioned them onto new plans when they purchased the Apple iPhone.
Oh.
And recently, the Optus customer, one Optus customer, told ZDNet, which is one of the tech journals here in Australia, that he received a $693 bill with a large data excess charge, despite the fact that he was on a $79 a month iPhone plan with 700 meg of data allowance, and he'd only used 100 meg of it. Uh-huh. But you've got to be careful here, because if you sign up for a plan and your billing month is, say, on the 20th for whatever reason, you might have other services with a telco, they tend to round everything up so that the billing date, you might only have 2 weeks of rental, if you know what I mean, or of a service until it hits your billing date.
Yeah.
So what they do is they prorata it across. Telstra do this as well. I know, I've seen it because I think the other day Telstra put their mobile usage up and they changed all their stuff, so you got more. But they prorated it across the course of that month, so all of a sudden you didn't get, you know, an extra 150 meg, you might have got 80 meg and they cranked up, you've used so much already.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got to be careful. You've got to read between the lines a little bit here.
Mm.
So anyway, they've fixed all those sort of problems. And as we alluded to, Vodafone has also had bill shock with a number of complaints from Australian customers.
So these telecommunications companies, Optus and Vodafone and all those, are they helping the customers who are having this happen, or they're just expecting them to pay the high-level bills?
I think it's in their interest to help them do this because a lot of customers just aren't sort of too familiar.
Yeah, but are they doing it?
Yeah.
They are, that's good.
Well, yeah, Vodafone, same deal. they're getting a lot of customers who have unexpectedly large phone bills after they bought the iPhone. One bill, Vodafone has charged a customer Vodafone had charged a customer on a $99 a month capped plan over $800, including several hundred dollars relating to just 25 megabytes of download.
Oh,
That'd hurt the back pocket. Yeah. 25 meg. Oof. It's almost as bad as roaming on Telstra from $3, dollar, whatever it is, 65 a megabyte.
Yeah.
The customer said he'd previously been a Vodafone customer before buying an iPhone when the Apple handset launched in Australia last month. It appeared that the Vodafone had not correctly migrated him across to the new iPhone plan. So it appears that technology might be giving the customers a bit of a bum steer. So Vodafone obviously put him on the right plan now, and one can only assume. That he's been looked after there.
I guess that's the sort of thing that happens when a company releases new plans and, yeah, there's lots of changes going on. It's to be expected that occasionally a customer service representative will slip up and not quite get the right keys on the terminal. But, as long as they fix it up when it's brought to their attention.
I tried to cancel a telephone service recently with an organisation who will remain nameless. What else? I've done a couple of things like that. They all like faxes still. You can ring Telstra up. This is a credit to Telstra. You can ring Telstra or any of the big telcos up and say, hey, I'd like to cancel my telephone plan.
Yep.
And, they just take a verbal okay. You prove who you are and they go, yeah, no worries. But a lot of people like still getting faxes, which is very unusual because I don't know too many offices these days which have a working fax. There's normally something sitting on the corner there. What's that over there sitting next to the kettle? Oh, that's the fax. Because everyone uses email and stuff these days. But no.
Not quite everybody. Yeah, there's still a lot of faxes floating around the networks.
Oh, yeah. You obviously said not. I don't mean electronic ones. See, we're all electronic these days.
Well, I see those too. I've got a few customers that do all their faxing in and out of modems, which is really good, and that saves a lot of paper.
Yeah.
So but no, there's still a lot of faxes going on. So people are used to it. It's old technology, but it's technology everyone knows how to use.
It is, but still. Some people just don't have it these days, but that's another story.
Anyway.
So that was a cancellation by fax. Still needed that. You can't just ring a telco and say, hey, I've had my enough and prove who you are. And they go, no, we've got to get it on fax. Oh, great.
Curious.
And I also, another reason where I had to use fax was I wanted to cancel a service on 3, one of the broadband plans that I've got because I didn't need it anymore. Anyway, I rang 3 and despite the fact that they tried to sell me everything under the sun and grill me. I went from marketer to marketer, so saying, oh, we're sorry to lose your service. We'll transfer you through now to the cancellations department. And then the cancellation department get another person on the phone speaking about, well, why? And hang on a sec, it's not earth-shattering cancellation. I just don't need the service anymore. But they were intent on selling me stuff. And anyway, to cut a long story short, she said, yeah, send us a fax. I've got, oh, not another one. Have you got an email address? I can just email you a thing. No, it's got to be on a fax.
Yeah.
Anyway, I sent them the fax and they still haven't cancelled it. See, it gets lost.
Yeah.
I don't know. They sent me a thing the other day saying, oh, we haven't got your fax yet. And I said, well, I've got a receipt here saying that I sent it on this day and it connected and it handshaked and it went through. Is fax a bit unreliable? Maybe it's old antiquated 80s, 70s technology. But anyway, will we replace it one day? Will the email, will the PDF really take over the fax?
Probably not entirely. While you can still, easily send handwritten faxes, you can sign something and drop it in the fax and get the signature to come through. Getting, putting something on the scanner and scanning it in and PDFing it and emailing it, it's all a bit too many steps for some people. It's easier just to jam it in the fax machine.
Or you can miss me. I'm going to go to Officeworks and buy a $99 fax.
There you go.
I'll put it on the bench.
Well, what you do these days...
I'll use it for 3 faxes I send a month. I mean, a year.
But what you do...
a decade.
you get one of the ones it's a laser printer as well as a laser fax, and it's got a scanner on it as well.
Well, that's a good idea.
And that makes it a little photocopy machine. But get the laser printer-based ones, not the ink cartridge-based ones. Otherwise, it'll cost you a fortune to run the thing. It'll cost you just a little bit more to buy it as a laser printer one, but it won't cost you a fortune to run it.
You should be a sailor, I'm convinced.
Ink into it. And that gives you a fax machine, but also gives you a machine that does other really useful things for you as well.
Okay, sold. That's my next task before not too long.
There you go.
Telstra is also upping its limits on its wireless plans.
Yeah.
10 gig. Boy, that'd cost.
Would have been the old days.
Oh, still sort of does, I think. No, actually, in all fairness, they've actually changed their prices around, like a lot of telcos have of recent days. The new plan, which is now available, will cost $129.95 per month over a 12-month contract period. Now, I personally don't know anyone who uses 10 gig on a wireless plan, but $129, it's come down considerably compared to where it started,
hasn't it? Really it? Has, and that is a huge amount of data.
There'll be people in the other parts of the world laughing, going, how much?
Yeah, but for this country, that's a big step forward.
And for this telco, yeah. That's huge.
Yeah.
But what else have they got? Yes, their new Telstra's new 1 gig plan will cost $60 per month. I'm rounding. It's $59.95 for those sticklers. while the 3 gig plan will cost $90 per month. Once again, rounded. Each subscriber could save up to $25 a month by upgrading to the new plans, which Telstra claims will be possible by visiting their Big Pond, Big Clogmire website. If you've been there recently. And in contrast to that, 3 now offers 1 gig of broadband for just $15 a month, 3 gig for $29. I'm not rounding there. The modem is also free on a 24-month contract. That's where they get you. Telstra's highest data plan is 7 gig. Sorry, let me start again. 3's highest plan is 7 gig compared to Telstra's new 10 gig, but the cost is $80 per month less than Telstra's. You get 2, wouldn't you? You buy 2 7 gigs if you need it. I don't know who needs that much mobile broadband bandwidth unless you're running it from home because you can't get ADSL or something.
Yeah.
If you're in the country, maybe that's it. Maybe they're rural users that are using it.
Could be.
And
could
if you're
be.
A rural user and you're in business, $129 a month for mobile for broadband ain't too bad, especially if you're getting good speeds.
Yeah, and if you've got no other choice, yeah, yeah.
The data rates, too, to mobile is pretty good, too. Everyone's doing network upgrades. Like, I think before Phil left recently, we should have another Phil saying. I've got it here somewhere. before Phil left, he was touting the fact that the bandwidth, you know, 20 meg downloads is on the horizon. Not that we've got devices that actually works at
no,
that speed.
No, what are the devices? Most of the devices are 3.5 or 7, aren't they?
7's about the best yeah. you get at the moment. So,
but even so, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I can't find it. It's disappeared. It'll front just as you hear it. Other interesting bit of news, just on a technological front, which I thought was really very interesting.
Yeah.
An electric plane smashed the world record for endurance. Little aeroplane. A solar-powered plane has more than double the record for flight endurance by staying aloft for 82 hours and 37 minutes.
Interesting.
The little Zephyr aircraft, developed by defence firm Kinetic, with funds from the UK Ministry of Defence and the US Department of Defence, flew at an altitude of up to 60,000 feet.
Okay.
That's pretty high. Powered solely by solar cells on its wings and a small lithium battery.
Yep. What was it doing up there? Was it taking photographs or...?
Don't know. It was just a little joyride, I think. The plane was originally developed to provide communications networks over battlefield areas.
Ah.
But it's hoped that with longer flights, it could be used to provide more permanent networking hubs for businesses and consumers over developing countries or in areas where natural disasters have cut existing data channels.
Using things like that for communications is a phenomenally good idea. Because putting a satellite, especially a geostationary satellite that stays in the one place up in orbit, is a hugely expensive undertaking. But if you could have a fleet of, you know, 3 or 4 of these little remote planes that go up, circle around until they need to come down for maintenance or whatever, and you have another one that goes up and takes its place, you can have a little repeater base up in the air. You know, might be a mobile phone base, might be a radio repeater base for emergency services radios. You know, and you can bring communications into an area that's got no infrastructure by using a plane where you otherwise would have to use either base stations or satellites.
It's a great idea. Just don't go out at night.
Well, presumably you'd have to have
donk on the head. Is it? Oh, what's that? don't fly too
goes,
well. And, yeah, exactly.
The sun goes down and the planes fall down. Well, presumably you'd have battery storage so that they have the solar cells charge up the batteries during the day and keep the thing running during the night.
Now, speaking of aeroplanes,
yes.
One of our regulars who comes in here semi-regularly is Mark Mayer.
Mark Mayer has not been in for a long time.
No, but he will be in about 2 weeks' time.
Oh,
he's coming
good.
In to talk because Mark is a retired Qantas commercial airline pilot.
Yep.
And he talks about all sorts of things in aviation because he's very passionate about that.
And he'll be able to give us the technical lowdown that goes behind the scenes with some of this nonsense we've been hearing about in the press lately about maintenance issues with Qantas and other airlines.
Absolutely. He'll be able to set the record straight.
And he'll know what's real and what's a beat up.
And he's also got friends on the inside.
Ah, so he
can find out what really has happened.
Yeah.
There's been also a lot of unreported things too. There's very much 2 rules out there for aviation at the moment. If anything, if Qantas so much as has a bar fridge leak in first, we'll hear about it as first, you know,
it'll be headline news. Yeah.
Whereas other airlines can sort of, you know, miss runways and you don't sort of hear much about it. So
it's worth noting that a lot of these incidents in the last few weeks that have hit the front page that have happened to Qantas, like, you know, flights have been cancelled because of a faulty air conditioner or a strange noise coming from somewhere. These are things that happen every day of the week. And, you know, they're only hitting the front page because Qantas had an incident a few weeks ago and the media's watching them. But, I mean, the fact that a flight is cancelled because of a mechanical problem on a plane is a sign of high safety standards and good procedures. It's not a sign that there's something systemically wrong, you know, despite what you might read in the major newspapers.
And we're going to go to a break because I've just looked at the time and we're running amazingly over. But the outgoing...
Talking too much again.
El Presidente of Qantas, Jeff Dixon, made some very interesting points that the company, it's one of the only airlines in the world that's actually done anything growth-wise in some fairly major... you know, turbulent times for aircraft from 9/11 all the way through to the SARS
terrible
virus and all that sort
of stuff. For the airline business. So, yeah, and Qantas are still around.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Madonna had a birthday. Did you know she turned 50?
Really?
The singer.
Yeah.
You know, Madonna like a virgin.
Yeah.
Her.
The one we used to listen to back in the 80s. Yeah.
That's the one. She sometimes appears, sometimes in the music breaks along here. But anyway, because she keeps putting out music.
She does.
She does amazing things.
Still going strong.
Anyway, the spammers have... latched on to the fact that she's turning 50. The spammers have been diabolical during the Olympics too, might add, but we've spoken about that in previous shows. Pop diva Madonna is the highlight of a new round of malicious spam messages going around, and spammers are using the hype around her 50th birthday and the looming World Tour, which doesn't apply here in Australia, kicking off this weekend as to get their malware out there. So they're obviously spamming everyone.
Okay. Yeah, everybody wants to know about it, so
a link to the alleged...
click on the links.
Yeah, well, you know, they beat it all up. A link to alleged scandalous video of the star promises to, you know, yada, yada, yada. Oh, hang on, that's a Microsoft ad now, isn't it? Anyway, yes, it's trying to get you to go to those sites and click on those links again. So be wary of Madonna spam messages and things like
that. Yeah, basically all of these things that try to say something scandalous or extraordinary, you know, sort of headlines that arrive in your email to get you to click on that. They're all trying to spread spyware and trying to infect your computer. Just don't click on that sort of stuff in your email ever.
Something that sort of disturbed me a little bit this week, which I thought, I better talk about this on the radio, is the new malware which is starting to come out, which is shape-shifting malware.
Shape-shifting malware?
Yes. You know how the way that your average malicious detection tool works, it looks for signatures and patterns and things like that. Well, these new guys are actually shape-changing as they go out there. So as they progress through the world of infection, they change their form. Mm. I've seen horror movies, I think, along those lines. And just the Dustin Hoffman one comes to mind too, which I can't think of the name of the movie. But anyway, security experts have warned that the new developments in malware are allowing criminals to stay one step ahead of the security vendors. Mark Hanauer, head of cyber crime division at Swiss Justice and Police Department, said in an interview that viruses and other malware now have the capabilities to change their signature every few hours.
Yep.
This means that the attackers are often one step ahead of the protection software. But then again, I guess you've got to look at how they deliver their payload. Is it via email? Is it via a malicious website? How do they do it? Because they have to update this. If it's an email thing, it's got to be a little bit tricky, I would have thought, unless it pulls in from a website.
So a lot of them these days are, of course, they're multi-vector attacks. So that
what's that? What's a multi-vector attack?
Well, that means that they're using more than one method to attack you. So they might get a link to you by infecting somebody's machine and sending out a whole swag of emails to everybody. Or they might take over someone's machine and send you links in your instant messaging. But then the link leads you to a website, so it's a website attack. And then the website attack has been generated by compromising some real guy's website and taking over their web server. So there's lots of different facets to the way the whole attack sort of meshes together.
Mm.
And yeah, it's sort of the way of the world these days. And I'm this constant arms race between trying to evade detection and the security companies writing up better protection, that's been going on for years now.
I think everyone's a bit over it. Like, I'm so sick of it. Your spam is just ridiculous. The foistware, how's your inbox in, or your control panel in Windows this week? Is good? Nothing surprisingly popped in there?
I'm afraid to look.
For those of you who are wondering what we're talking about, last week Graham found out that Apple had foisted in there a Mobile Me application into the desktop. Into my control panel,
no less, without asking me.
Which is a fairly sacred place for a lot of people's computers. The control panel is just everything. Anyway. Now, just briefly, we've got to get through a few more things before we conclude this evening.
Yep.
Servers and storage move over quad cores. Intel's ready to ship 6-core chips. More cores for your buck.
Yep.
I don't know if we're going to have applications that actually utilize 6 cores. I'm still struggling to find applications that use a couple of cores.
Oh, well, no, it depends on what you're doing. Yeah. A little while back now, I built a really nice terminal server for a customer that was running an application using terminal server. And we put in 2 quad-core processors in there. They run, you know, a couple of dozen sessions on this machine, and it runs along rather nicely because of all these cores that allow it to do lots of processing all at once.
Excellent. Because we've moved over, because everyone used to look at the speed and how good a machine was by the processing speed.
No, that's not.
But not anymore.
It's how many things it can do at once is sometimes more critical. So a slower machine running multiple cores. That's why the modern line of dual core machines perform so much better than the previous version of single cores. Because it do more things at once, and that's what Windows is all about.
I must admit, at work we're fairly labor intensive. And computer intensive when it comes to converting movies to MPEGs and things like that.
Absolutely,
for DVDs.
Yeah.
And a dual core machine does actually speed the process up considerably, but
particularly if you're using software that's written to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I don't think I am.
Or if you're doing multiple things at once. So it may well be that even if your software isn't written to take advantage of it, your MPEGing process might take up one whole processor core, but that means that all the other things that the machine is doing can be done on the other core so that the processing task gets left alone and gets to finish really quickly.
Yeah. I'm just reading on the chat at the moment. Warlock says, so long as your application is multi-core aware. And I agree with that.
Yeah, but even if your application isn't multi-core aware, like the application I'm running on that terminal server isn't multi-core aware itself, but terminal services is, so you can run an instance on each core.
And there's another one there. Sorry, my screen just went blank for a sec. Since we bought, this is Governor 1971, since we bought a dual-core laptop final, the virus checker can only max out 50% of CPU instead of 100%. Well, that's very true.
It is true, yeah.
I've noticed
the task, even if that task is, it's obviously doing something wrong that it's maxing out the CPU. But it's only maxing out half of it now, so that the other half of the CPU can still get something done.
Yes, because I use, I'm trying to think of the name of the application, but it's a Sorensen, no, not Sorensen, it's a codec which makes movies for me, but it only maxes out 50% of it as well.
Yeah.
And I've still got, I'm going, use the other half. I'm more than happy for it because it's a dedicated machine. Just make these things as fast as you can.
Well, just launch 2 of these processors at once and encode 2 movies at once.
The license won't let you do that.
Oh,
it's one of those funny things.
Oh, well.
So, anyway.
But at least it doesn't bring the rest of your machine to a halt. You can still do other things while it's encoding.
No, that's right. Anyway, moving right along, an IT guy shot for email data leak. I thought this could be a good odd spot. But a Sydney-based music website has apologised to users after accidentally exposing over 700 usernames and passwords to members of its mailing list. The website 3D World, which is owned by Destra Media, they used to be a client of ours. Sorry, let me mute that. That's the chat room going ballistic over there. This is why my ears pricked up, because they used... Anyway, they blamed the leak on a malfunctioning email script. In an email to subscribers, the site apologised for the error, claiming that the IT guy responsible has been taken out the back and shot repeatedly.
Oh, most unkind.
At least they have a sense of humour there. But,
yes.
Anyway, rather unfortunate, really.
It does highlight the need to be careful when you do send out mass emails. There was another one of these a while back, one of the political parties, wasn't it, sent out an email that let the cat out of the bag on who was on the mailing list. And yeah, this is one thing, if I can remind everybody, if you are sending out mail to a list of people, send the email to yourself and BCC the list.
Absolutely.
Because if you send it to the list or you CC the list, everybody gets to see everybody else's email address.
I've got some really nice email addresses thanks to people who have done exactly the opposite of what you've said. And that's very embarrassing.
Quite often, the if your customers have been good enough to give you their email address,
yes,
they probably don't want you spreading that email address around to all the other customers.
Oh, exactly.
So
if you work for the Victorian government, you know who you are.
There you go. And a lot of people do it. But yeah, I mean, it's a simple thing. If you're sending to a list, send the mail to yourself, because a lot of email programs have trouble if there isn't someone in the to field. So send it to yourself and BCC the list.
All right, we're now officially running over, so quick here. Wireless power eliminates charges. Now, this is interesting. Intel showed off wireless electric power systems that analyze what they say could revolutionize modern life by freeing devices from transformers and wall outlets. I find it amazing. How can you actually send power over the radio? I'm assuming it's radio waves.
Mm.
Intel Chief Technology Officer Justin Ratner demonstrated a wireless energy resonant link.
Yep.
There's a new acronym. WERL, as he spoke at California's firm's annual developers forum in San Francisco. Lid, why weren't you there? Electricity was sent wirelessly to a lamp on a stage, lighting a 60-watt bulb that uses more power than your typical laptop computer.
There you go.
Most importantly, the electricity was transmitted without zapping anything else or anyone that got between it and the sending device.
And there's no reason why it should.
No, your hair stands up on end when you get a bit close to it. But
nonsense. But yeah, this is how you do it, with tuned circuits, with resonant circuits. This is really cool. This is great technology.
This is what we need, isn't it?
Absolutely, it's what we need. You'll only have to put your notebook down within range of the hotspot and it will charge, without you having to plug anything in. That's the put your mobile phone down on the bedside table in the charging hotspot. You won't have to plug a lead into it to charge it. That's the sort of thing we need.
Absolutely. All right. Yes, back with the Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume.
Motorists have to give fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometres
per second was good. That you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
One of the biggest problems these days with technology is that we've all got digital cameras which have thousands of digital photographs. We never take the film down to the chemist anymore, so we never get any prints
tens
back
of thousands
to put on the shelves, on the mantelpiece.
Yeah, that's a very big point.
And the solution is a digital photo frame. And Kodak...
Yeah, they've been too dear up until now, I reckon.
Yep, well, that's a bit of a problem, but Kodak are adding some digital photo frames to their EasyShare range. In particular, I'm looking at the EasyShare P520 digital photo frame. It's a 5-inch LCD display.
Well, it's pretty big.
4:3 aspect ratio. It's got touch-sensitive border controls. It takes an SD memory card, or you can connect to it using USB. And it's to come out in September this year for around about $80.
Oh, now that's reasonable. That's a good Christmas present.
It'd be a great Christmas present for someone who's got a digital camera and, wants to be able to put their photos on display.
I want one of the ones where you put a SIM in the back so you can MMS a picture to your photo frame.
Put a SIM
and then
in
give, and then give all your friends the phone number. Wouldn't that be just fantastic?
You can get some that are Bluetooth and you can Bluetooth through them as well. But this is easy. If your camera's a SD camera, you just put the SD card in it. Couldn't be easier.
Yeah, good. All right. That's
the Kodak EasyShare P520 digital photo frame.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
It's my turn this time. I'm going to give this week's website to the guest that Lydia had a chat to, which is Michael Gray, who's the search engine optimizer over that part of the world. His website, or his blog actually, www.wolfhowl.com. Now, I had a really good read of this whilst...
That's W-O-L-F-H-O-W-L. H-O-W-L.
That's it?
.com.
If you build websites, even if you do it for a living, but even if you don't do it for a living, it's a really good read. You can find out how they all work and how Google puts, you know, importance into links and SEO. And I think even talking about things like little green bar that you see sometimes, the rank
okay,
bar.
Okay, can you explain a bit about how Google does organise those results?
Not now because we're out of time, but right. Yes, the blog will.
Excellent.
So have a bit of a read there. And yes, it's very good reading. So before you even start doing your websites, if you're doing them personally for the club or however you want to do it, go and have a bit of a read there and you'll learn all sorts of things about it. You might even have a business where you want to get up on the website too, and that'll help you do all of those sorts of good things. The Tech Talk Radio website of the week, all the W's. wolf-howl.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
And the Odd Spot this week comes from America, where hacker has compromised the telephone system of the United States Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Oh, FEMA, in case of an emergency, like an earthquake or something.
Or a hurricane hits a major city in Florida. That's the same FEMA. The hacker was able to compromise a voicemail system within the agency's offices in Maryland. The compromised line was then used to place some 400 long-distance calls, according to reports. Running up a phone bill of in excess of $12,000.
Who could you talk to for that long?
I have no idea.
You can talk to Lydia for that long. I've rang her on numerous occasions. That's why I'm a cat to my plan.
There you go. That's, it was a security shortcoming in the voicemail system that allowed the guy to get in. But the worst thing is it was a known flaw, and there was even a bulletin about it from the Department of Homeland Security in 2003. The fix had been available for several years,
but no one did
the contractor who was looking after the system failed to install the upgrade.
Tisk, tisk.
So, yeah, it's a timely warning to keep your updates up to date on anything that faces the customer.
You might get a big bill otherwise.
That's right.
All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. I'm Graham Callaghan here this evening. The rest, well, actually, JD will be in next week, and coming over in about 2 weeks' time, we've got Mark Mayer to talk all about aviation.
And that'll be one to really look forward to. Put that one down in your diary.
Come up on the chats and all that sort of stuff. Thank you, everyone, on the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We enjoy your company each and every week there. Come and join us live if you're listening to us on the podcast one night, even from all over the world. It works anywhere, providing the DNS is good. We had a scare. Anyway, until next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panelis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.